This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
And this is Bob Fitrakis. And would you like to introduce our guest, Connie?
Yeah, we're welcoming today Aaron Upchurch from Diverse Strategies, a consulting firm that promotes leadership diversity. So why don't you tell us more about that, Aaron?
Well, Diverse Strategies is a consulting firm that works with nonprofits and businesses in terms of diversity and inclusion, as well as strategic planning and organizational development.
Great.
And you're here right after a great historical event. It appears the U.S. military has become more diverse.
Yes, indeed.
Well,
yes, indeed.
Whether they're actually more diverse or whether they're just
they were like always
making
diverse.
It easier on people.
Right.
I think
acknowledging
maybe,
it.
Maybe they're just making it easier on GLBT people in the military.
Yeah, and what I think what is important just to note about that it is just for the GLB part of the community, because transgender servicemen and servicewomen still cannot serve legally.
Okay.
So it's just an important thing to acknowledge.
Definitely. So in your work with Diverse Strategies, I think you're here today to talk to us about a leadership program for LGBT youth.
Yes. I am in the process, well, it's already been developed, but moving forward, a project called the HUE Leadership Development Program, and it's focused on LGBTQ youth of color or young adults of color ages 18 to 25. And just for the acronym, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer youth.
Great.
And again, the Q popping up now more frequently. Why the notion of queer? I mean, I was the advisor to Queer Nation, which was very controversial in its day of kiss-ins.
Mm-hmm.
Quaint days back in the 1990s.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds fun.
Is this a self-described term?
You know it is. It's in the spirit of reclaiming negative words. I think we see a lot of cultures, minority cultures, doing this, using words that have once been used to marginalize or oppress. People are now using those words to feel empowered. And we're seeing this a lot more within the younger part of the community, maybe 30 and under, using the word queer to identify. And it also captures more the fluidity of sexuality, gender identity, sexual orientation.
And you're probably well aware that recently we discovered that indeed there are bisexuals.
Surprise, surprise, there are.
A major study involving arousal. And apparently there's a good percentage of people out there that are aroused by both males and females, which contradicts a previous study, doesn't it?
Always. We know it's never real until the research says it is. But the research basically backs up what we know to be true. Anyone in the community, that bisexuality is very true and very real sexual orientation.
And it's odd because throughout history, whole cultures have advocated or practiced some form of bisexuality.
Right, the Greeks.
Indeed.
Yeah. Going back to the Greeks.
There's that.
And particularly their militaristic, those Spartans, by God.
It's all about being fluid.
So why aren't people fluid? Or are we still finding some resistance to other people's sexuality? I've never really been able to understand this. It's sort of like, what other people's sexuality has really nothing to do with me. Why is it so upsetting historically to so many Americans?
I think that's a good question. I think that question's always going to be asked. There's different reasons. I think religion, spirituality plays a big part in it, particularly those who are stuck in heteronormative ways, you know, male, female, marriage, kids, very traditional view of relationships. And so anything that veers away from that, I think it just kind of freaks people out, or people don't understand, or, you know, they're scared. There's all these different things. And I think, again, as our culture continues to evolve, I think we're going to see our youth really making a big difference. They're the ones who are able to take a look at relationships and understand there isn't one box or one right way to have a family, to have relationships, to express your love and affection. And so I really think we're going to start to see some changes with that, and just the moral fabric of our country in general. And as we begin to get, younger leaders and politics and whatnot making legislation, I think that will be reflected.
Great. So I'd like to hear more about the leadership program mm-hmm. that you have for LGBTQ youth of color.
Sure.
And I guess how, you know, what your goals and objectives are with the program and how listeners who fit that description might get involved and, you know, be part of that program. If that's
sure.
Possible.
Sure. Well, it's a leadership development program, and the mission is to build leadership, political consciousness, and organizing skills of the LGBTQ young adults of color. And basically, it's a program that has three components. There's a leadership summit for ages 18 to 25, where there'll be hands-on training and workshops, focus on leadership skills, cultural pride, social justice, leadership development, advocacy, activism, which will then flow into a mentoring program. And so youth that attend the summit will then be filtered into a mentoring program where they will have the access to leaders who are already doing things politically, financially, creatively, community-wise, to kind of continue to build those skills, foster those skills, which also there will be a community service component to it as well. And so I feel like leaders are servants first. And so part of being a good leader is being giving back to the community and then also participating in community life. And I think a big part of the community service piece is it's about visibility. You know, visibility through volunteerism, community service. Research shows that when people know someone who is LGBTQ identified and they are not, they're more likely to support legislation because those people become human to them. And so it's that piece of visibility. It's also opening doors and affirming younger kids, youth who are looking and saying, hey, there's people that look like me doing good work, and I know I can do this too.
Great. And so how can people find out more? Do you have a website or where people can sign up?
That is in the works at this okay. point. The website should, I'm hoping, will be up by the end of this year, 2011. The summit is being planned for the end of April. So once that data is solidified, then the website will go up. However, if people have any would like more information on how they can get involved or interested in being a mentor, they can email me at Erin at diversestrategies.org, and that's Erin at diversestrategies.org.
Great, thanks.
Since you deal with people of color, what about the notion that perhaps the black community or Latino-Latina mm-hmm. community tends to be a little less tolerant of diversity, or mirror the reactionaries and fundamentalists in the white community? True or not?
I don't know that it's true or false. I think it leans more towards true in certain parts of the community. However, you know, there's parts of the black community specifically who are not homophobic and who are very open and affirming and accepting in communities of faith. And so, but I will say that we tend to find more resistance, I guess, in terms of accepting and welcoming people from the LGBT community in both of those communities.
Well, sounds like there's a thundering herd.
Yes.
But anyway, not quite. But and I'm wondering whether there's a divide in terms of education. And one thing that those three communities I mentioned, mm-hmm. fundamentalist whites, often Latinos and Latinas and blacks have in common is a much higher rate of more orthodox and conservative church-going than those, say, in the campus area like myself that mm-hmm. tend to be secular humanists and in a far more diverse and liberal environment.
Yes.
Is that a question?
Is that a question?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, is it obviously a cultural component? I mean, for example, I take the standard notion from people I know in the black community mm-hmm. who go, you know, and many black activists I know who on one level will say, you know, will say, look, we don't want them in our church. They're sinners.
Yeah.
And I'll say, but aren't you involved right now in adultery and or having fornication? I mean, does does God kind of, your version of God, pick out sinners? I mean, it's far more likely for some of the black activists. And on the other hand, many of my black intellectual friends will say, well, you know, why would they throw them out? You know, I mean, well, look what they would do to the church choirs, you know, the music directors. They have a tremendous impact. Everyone knows there's people that are gay in black churches, as well as Hispanic churches, as well as these white fundamentalists. Well, the whites will usually end up coming out on TV.
This is true after a scandal.
So is this cultural, how do you deal with those cultural factors? If I say, well, you know, no offense, and I've heard rappers say this in videos, but that's not part of my culture.
It is a culture. Unfortunately, the cultures tend to be divided, not exclusively, obviously, but I think when you look at faith communities, that is a big piece of it. And, you know, when they use the word homosexuality, which I tend to not use because it's very clinical and I think there's such a negative connotation, but the church in particular will use that. It's like the least acceptable sin of them all, if you will. And so there's that.
I thought that was eating pork. Isn't that an abomination in Leviticus?
Well, anyway. I think, I think
pork eaters!
That being said,
stop the pig holocaust.
But in terms of education, I think, you know, there's more acceptance where there's higher levels of education and access to social and economic resources. And so if you want to look at it in a class issue and where lower income families, communities live, they typically are in communities of color. And so with that comes less education, less access to different cultures, communities that might that differ from what the traditional family is talking about and how they're raising their children. And so I do think that is where a large portion of that comes from, the resistance.
And what's the diverse strategy there? You come to a nonprofit that deals with people in lower social economic status, people that are minorities, and they tell you, I don't accept this.
Right.
How do you approach it?
Well, there's lots of different strategies. Obviously, there's people who are doing things, you know, on a larger level with legislation and the schools and education, and I think education is key. My choice and my role as a consultant and with this program is providing opportunities. And so, because there are young people who are ready to be out or who want to be, and so I want to provide that avenue opportunity for them to do so and to have access to those resources and social skills and opportunities that they might not otherwise get.
It sounds like this is a great program that provides support for young people. And so it really kind of seems to look at the intersectionality between sexual orientation and race or ethnicity. And, you know, I think young people are really facing a lot today. There are a lot of oppressions. It's hard to be, you know, a gay teenager. It's hard to be a person of color in, you know, in Columbus, I think. So, I mean, I think that is seems to be a really good strategy to provide support so that these young people will know kind of what they're up against in some ways. And also that they have a source of support.
Absolutely. And also in terms of leadership roles, I think there is so much empowerment when you see people who look like you come from your community and leadership roles doing things that positively impact the community. And one goal of the leadership development program is to increase the number of people of color within the LGBT community in leadership roles. And I think as we see like a cycle and moving forward and younger people seeing that, to know that they also can do doing those same things.
Great. Yeah. So,
I've got to excuse myself.
Bob has taken off.
I'm going to see Karl Rove, and if you read any insider accounts of the White House, you'll know it was very diverse, but they mainly were all on the down low. And there's actually books by Brock and others who have gone on to form David Brock Media Matters that said, you know, for a place that was homophobic, there sure were a lot of gay lesbian people in the highest. Does that surprise you?
No.
This is Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3, 102.1.
Keep the diverse strategies coming, and yeah. I'll inform Mr. Rowe.
So Bob is taking off to go see Karl Rove speak at Cedarville College or University, and I am here in the studio with Aaron Upchurch from Diverse Strategies, a consulting firm that works with nonprofits to work on diversity issues. So yes. Thank you again for coming. I guess in my reading about LGBT youth mm-hmm. and homelessness, yes. it seems like one of the greatest causes of homelessness for teenagers is when queer youth are kind of abandoned or disowned by their families.
Yes.
And so a program like the one you're developing, mm-hmm. it seems like could give a lot of support to people who are dealing with this.
Sure. And just to kind of back up what you said, I think we do know that a disproportionate amount of LGBTQ youth are homeless. In recent studies, 42% of homeless youth are LGBTQ identified, and 65% of homeless people are members of racial minorities. And so when you put the two together, the numbers are very staggering. What's great about this project is I am collaborating with several other or local nonprofits, community service organizations. And so, mm-hmm. one, to send the message that, yes, as a community, we do support our young people, but two, so that those resources are going to be made available, you know, so they're not just coming. Yes, leadership skills are important. Yes, you know, education's important, but if people have to worry about their, you know, basic human needs of living and eating, they're not going to be worrying about leadership. And so we don't want to ignore that piece, those needs, and so definitely want to be able to build those partnerships and be able to filter them into those resources.
Great. So could you tell us what organizations you're working with and you know, how that's going to kind of play into your program? Is this program mostly based in Columbus, or is it Ohio, or is it broader than that?
It's funny you ask, because initially it was just Columbus, and then I remember my parents have always taught me to think big, and then I thought, well, let's just do it in Ohio, and then I thought, well, why does it just have to be Ohio? The inaugural part of it will be in Columbus. I would love to replicate it across the state and some of the larger cities, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Dayton, Toledo, and then, you know, pull into the surrounding counties and cities. And would love to take it nationwide, obviously, if that's possible. But right now, I've been working with the following organizations, if you'd like me to list them.
Sure.
I'm working with the Ohio OSU Department of Women and Gender Studies, the OSU Multicultural Resource Center, Equality Ohio, Stonewall Columbus, Outlook Media, AIDS Resource Center of Ohio, New Leaf Columbus, Advent United Church of Christ, Fellowship Family House, the Columbus Urban League, HRC Columbus, the Summit United Methodist Church, Trans Ohio, and SHADES, which is an organization on OSU's campus, a student organization.
Great. Well, it sounds like you'll be able to pull together a lot of resources from yes. those organizations and get a lot of support. And I'm very happy to hear about the program. So what other issues would you like to talk about today? What are some of the biggest factors affecting LGBTQ youth of color, mm-hmm. Ages 18 to 25? I know that there are, you know, with the intersection of race and sexual orientation mm-hmm. and gender, you know, that you could probably teach people about that and mm-hmm. teach them, you know, what's affecting them, what social forces are at work, and mm-hmm. and you know, that they should have pride in themselves and their identity and their, you know, where they come from.
Sure. And, you know, obviously we're doing this program is because we know that LGBT youth of color do face specific challenges, and often it can be as seemingly small but as very huge of feeling the need to choose between their ethnic
yeah.
minority versus their sexual orientation and being that minority. And as Bob mentioned, the cultures and, you know, identity and all of those things. I also work with my founding member of New Leaf Columbus, which is local, and it's a social network for LGBTQ people of color and our allies.
Great.
And the purpose of New Leaf started for that reason, is to begin to really look at the intersections, bring organizations together, and also work with that part of the community, people of color, to say, you know, why aren't you involved? We've noticed there's a big, they're missing. People of color are missing from the political conversations here, or locally, economic conversations, community. And so we want to know what's happening. Why is that happening? And a lot of it is identity based, you know, and when you talk to a person of color, often their sexual orientation, gender identity is not the number one piece of their identity. They're just living their lives. And that's not, it's not the same as a maybe within the white culture. Being gay or queer identified is a very important part of one's identity. And so being able to address that and acknowledge it, and but also to educate more of the mainstream organizations that when you want to do outreach to people of color and you want to not just say, hey, we're white people wanting to invite you to join us, but saying, hey, we're part of your community. We want to work with you. We want to have a relationship and a partnership, and how to be inclusive and diverse in doing that. I think in terms of youth, you know, we know that our young men of color, particularly Black and Latino, who identify as gay, bisexual, or men who have sex with men, are at higher risk for HIV infections. And so we need to reduce that, reduce those risk factors, reduce those barriers, and increase our education.
Yeah, it seems like education would really be the way to do that, promoting safe sex practices, mm-hmm. and just, you know, letting people know what the dangers are and how to avoid them. And also not stigmatizing their sexual orientation, because with secrecy, you know, can come a lot of problems, I think.
Absolutely. And I, you know, that's what's so important when you talk about comprehensive sexual education, which I think should be in every single school.
Comprehensive. Inclusive of GLBT.
Exactly. It's not just about methods of birth control, but also what that looks like across the spectrum, and being able to say, you know, not just using the words, you know, girl, saying that men and women are together, or women and men, but being able to say boyfriend or girlfriend or partner, and using just inclusive language, or talking about, you know, how this could be, you know, certain behaviors are safer than others. And again, being inclusive with who those partners might be, just those little things. And I think, and it's all tied together. When you look at self-esteem and high-risk behaviors, young people who have higher self-esteem and are affirmed are more likely to engage in safer sexual practices than those who do not have that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And so we need to start affirming them at an even younger age, when our youth are coming out at ages 11 and 12 and 13. We need to be there, I think, as community members and leaders to say, come on, come along, it's okay.
Yeah. So what advice do you have to parents who find out that their child is gay? You know, maybe the parents are, you know, somewhat accepting of a gay lifestyle or sexual orientation, very accepting or not at all accepting.
Yes.
How would you, I guess, what would you say to parents who are finding out, you know, that their child is GLBT?
The first thing I would say is remember that they're your child first. And the way you love them the minute before you found out that they were identifying as LGBTQ, they're still the same person the moment after you find out. And I think that love and that commitment to the unconditional love can go very far. I think a lot of parents feel afraid, maybe because of risk, because of the negative images that we do see for people who identify this way. So I think there's fear. I think, of course, the religious and faith component comes in. But I think it all goes back to being unconditionally loving. And, you know, my parents have been that way. Yes, it was a struggle at first to understand and see things the right way, I guess, but what I would consider the right way. But it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be educated. It's okay to reach out for support. But one thing that my parents have given me is the unconditional love and support.
All right. And when I was in college, I had a gay friend who came out for the first time in college, and his family was very religious. And they actually, I think, may have disowned him when they found out about that. So I guess, how can your leadership program provide resources to that type of person who has maybe come out and had a pretty negative reaction for their from their family?
Sure.
How can you help that person, or, you know, what would you recommend in that kind of situation?
Sure. Well, there's a couple of options. One, because we're working with different organizations, we've got that connection there. There is a Fellowship Family House here in Columbus, Ohio. It's for LGBT youth ages 18 to 24, I believe, which offers shelter, and it's a homeless for homeless youth. I think so. There's that piece if they are homeless. If they have somewhere to live but still need other resources, you know, Stonewall Columbus has a Lavender listing. You can go in there. You can find, you know, counseling, other support. They can refer you. But there's also churches locally who I highly recommend people stop by. One is Advent United Church of Christ with Reverend Susan K. Smith, who is wonderful, very open, very welcoming, very accepting. There's King Avenue United Church, Methodist Church, Broad Street Presbyterian. There's lots of faith communities, the Unitarian Universalist churches. And so if someone's looking for that type of support, there are communities of faith that are open and welcoming. And so there's different things for what the different needs are. But definitely to reach out for help would be the biggest piece. And, you know, if somebody is unaware of how to get to those organizations, I can give them my email address out again. I'm happy to filter them where they need to go. There's also Trans Ohio for trans-identified youth.
Great. And I, you know, when I was in college, there was PFLAG. Mm-hmm. Is that for parents and friends of
lesbian and gay?
Yes. does that organization still exist, or are there other organizations for parents and friends, like support groups?
Sure, that organization does still exist. And what's great about it, as I mentioned New Leaf earlier, is we met with the Columbus chapter of PFLAG, and so they're very committed to diversity and inclusion. But I would, particularly for parents who are wanting additional support, to reach out to a local PFLAG chapter, because they can provide those resources. So yes, they are still around.
Okay. And for our listeners, again, this is Erin Upchurch from Diverse Strategies, who's telling us about her leadership program for LGBT youth of color, ages 18 to 25.
Yes.
And if you could, again, tell our listeners how to get a hold of you in case they're interested in either being mentors in your program, or if they know a young person who would like to apply.
Yes. You can email me at erin@diversestrategies.org. That's E-R-I-N at diversestrategies.org.
All right. And it sounds like your program is still kind of in the works. Mm-hmm. And when will you be launching it? Sometime early next year?
It will be launched fully in January. Like I said, right now we're working on the nuts and bolts in terms of identifying sponsorships, identifying a date for the summit, but the actual foundation has been laid in terms of the program design, and now we're just moving forward with community partnerships.
Okay. And so will it, like the location, will it be primarily at OSU?
That's what I'm trying to figure out now. We want to find a place that's inclusive with parking, and, you know, sometimes when you have things at a university, it communicates only for people who are
college students,
yeah. And this is not just for college students. It's those in that age group, 18 to 24.
Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And we have about a minute left in our show. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us that we should be on the lookout for, or just to sum up your program?
I think I would just say this program is very exciting. Nothing like this has ever been done before in Columbus or the state of Ohio. And I think we've reached a really new space in our community where the need for young people of color has been acknowledged, and we are all ready to do something about it.
Great. Well, it has been great having you on our show as a guest, and we're definitely looking forward to seeing, you know, what comes out of this. So definitely give us a call if you'd like to come back on the radio show when the program is launched.
Absolutely. Thank you, Connie.
Okay. And again, this is Erin Upchurch with Diverse Strategies, telling us about her leadership program for LGBT youth of color, 18 to 25. And it includes a mentoring program, a summit for GLBT youth of color, ages 18 to 25, and other support, and bringing together a lot of community resources. This has been Fight Back with Bob Fitrakis and Connie Goodell Newton on WCRS 98.3 102.1.
Thank you.